right, welcome to the NFR podcast. It has been a little while. Lots has happened since the last time we all got together and shared and talked. As always, we've got Rob. Rob, how you doing?
Good, man. It's good to be back. It's good to see you. They can't see you, but we can always see each other, so I always dig this part.
Yeah, I think that this should probably be the last podcast that we don't record video on, and we can share it out. I know we've talked about it a couple times, but I think that like from after this one, we should make sure that we're doing the recording in video, and we can get that on YouTube, and people can listen to it on their devices, or they can listen to it on YouTube and watch me on a Friday evening drink some bourbon, because that's how we're rolling today, right?
Like, so it's happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday.
It's good to be back.
It is good to be back. In the spirit of being back, before we get into our topic today, which will be about event preparation, since at least some events have opened up over the past 6 or 7 months, and it's almost been that long since we talked. In the podcast anyway, but some things happened in the past 6 or 7 months news-wise that I guess we can talk about for a minute.
Yep.
I'll go first since I don't know. I will. One of the awesome things news-wise, at least newsworthy to me, was I got to finally go. Maybe not obviously. For those that don't know, I live in Massachusetts. Rob lives in California. I moved out here 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And this summer I was able to go back to California, and Rob and I and Tim and a couple other people got together and were able to like actually ride in person together, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was good times, man.
It was. I got to ride up hills again, which was nice because we don't have those out here. At least none that are higher than, I don't know, a couple hundred feet.
Dude, and in 3 days, we went to three different mountain ranges, right?
That's true.
That was freaking Big Bear, Wrightwood, Idlewild, dude. I had never done that. That was super cool.
A little Southern California mountain tour, which was fun, which my flatland legs had some issues with, but it was fine.
Yeah, I'm going to say
I remembered how to climb a little bit. Let's see. What else had happened? I didn't get any new bikes. You didn't get any new bikes because there are no new bikes to buy. Thanks to the backlog and the industry and all that stuff. What else?
Still just like, like you said, I think the thing is, was when events started to open some months ago. So the notification of events to come. So that I think was the big thing. You started to see, you know, all the stuff that's, you know, gonna come up again. It's like, gosh, man, it's like finally.
And then some of those got postponed and moved. Like, it's been a real like give and take in terms of like you get this idea of like, hey, something's happened, and there's like, oh, actually it's not.
Right. Cool. Yeah.
So that gets us, I guess, towards the topic of today, which is like actually preparing for events. Because for the past year and a half, it's been more about preparing for Zwift and not preparing for outdoor stuff, which can be very different. The terrain can change. I think you've got you might talk about that. If not, I'll remind you to talk about it. So I'm not preparing for events other than flying out to California. But you are. So let's talk about some tips and tricks for preparing for events, some strategies for preparing for events. Because we all may have forgotten how to do it.
Right? Jeez, man. So this will be the last. So this is the Grizzly 100, they call it. But I'll be doing the 75K, which I think that's like 48 miles, something like that. Just under 8,000 feet of climbing. I was able to step onto a podium there in 2019. And then, of course, COVID and everything, just that was it, man. So like you said, year and a half, right? So here we are, 2021. In terms of how I think about that, or when I'm talking to people about coaching and preparing, like you said, tips, strategies, I always think first of going back to those kind of pillars of performance, you know, demands versus capacity. Whenever you're looking at anything, the very first thing you should be doing is, what are the demands of that course? Is it long? Is it short? Is there climbing? Is there not? Is it technical? Is it flat? you know, what mm-hmm. type of bike do you need? And then having known those demands, at least in a super general overhead sense, and you can kind of measure up immediately to see, where am I? Have I been climbing? Do I got the bike? You know, mm-hmm. do I even live close to the venue? Like you said, dude, there's things I'm looking at maybe 1-2 years from in the future that are in different states. Yeah. I ain't going to be going to Colorado, bro, to be like riding courses regularly, right? And that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, but I think historically, like you've been, when events come or are coming up, you've been like more willing to like go do the actual course to prepare, where like if it were when, you know, we're both in Southern California, if there was something down in San Diego, you would make the trip down to San Diego or whichever, where I wouldn't. Like that's just I had a different strategy.
But you'd had a different skill set also, right? So I do get pretty focused there for sure. But you guys listening, it's like Eric was a ton better once he started mountain biking. So if you go from day one, we say we're gonna start mountain biking, like dude, I was a super noob, sucked everything, you know, I was crashing at every warm-up even before the race, right? So my thing was always like, I need to ride the course to see if there's something there that mm-hmm. I won't be able to do and I'll get hurt, dude. And even in 2019, remember I had a catastrophic freaking crash on a section that I had not previously seen, fatigued, it all kind of stacked up. But different approaches. But again, you had a way different skill set. I've been chasing your wheel downhill for all these years, man. So I couldn't just go do an event, man.
Yeah. I think that we can talk about the approach where you can physically access the space to get you to get familiarized with it. And then we can talk about some approaches that like maybe you can't, like maybe it's not just a 3-hour drive. Maybe it's a 3-state away thing. How can you understand like what, even within the demands versus capacity, how can you understand like what is even going to be in front of you in terms of like terrain or technical or whichever?
So a lot of what I do is, you know, both me and your indoor power trainers on the kickers. So one of the races that never came to be, I'll go this year, end of the year, was the Filthy 50 in Compo, just north of Mexico, east of San Diego. And I'm like, dude, that's a long drive to you, right? I just can't be making that drive. So step one for me in terms of like, you know, demands versus capacity measuring, like, okay, I think I could do this distance climbing. I'm reading the course description. The next place I go is to YouTube to look for training course recording videos, right? So Ben Goyette, right? A dude, shout out to that guy because he's always sharing all his stuff, which I think is super cool. And I don't know how many hours, dude, I log, but I log some freaking hours, man, on that Filthy 50 course because of Ben. I was able to watch and see like, oh, okay, so it's pretty chunky downhill stuff here. So that's what I did for something that was way out of, you know, hey babe, I'm going to be back in, you know, 2 hours. Like, nah, that ain't happening. So
yeah. Being able to do course recon on YouTube is pretty great.
Yeah. So that's a big deal.
Sometimes you got to wade through a bunch of crap videos, but it's,
right. Yeah. You know.
Mine are all good.
But you do edit good, but knowing like, obviously Ben has a track record of putting up some good stuff, right? And he's been doing it a while, so you know, I'm writing and seeing the actual writer perspective. So he does a good job of being able to see like, oh yeah, that's some steep ass shit, you know. And
he's done some mountain bike stuff and some cyclocross stuff too. He's got both. He's got good stuff. Yeah.
So I think he does a good job. So that's if it is too far, that's what I would say is YouTube search. You can search under the event names, or sometimes it's segment names, course names. There's usually, even if you don't find people that have race event stuff, you're going to find somebody in there just recording, you know, portions of a course so that you can check it out. And typically what they're sharing is like the most gnarly technical or challenging parts. And so at least you would see that to realize like, yeah, I'm not all about that hardcore, chunky, rocky downhill back.
But then, like, you can also take that, right? Like, you understand, like, oh, there's a bunch of, maybe there's a bunch of chunky stuff. I'm going to have to do, like, a bunch of uplifts on the front wheel.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do all this stuff. What do I have locally that I can use to replicate at least that, right? Like, part of it.
Bam. So that's the thing. And so that is it, right. We both know it's like sometimes some guys, again, Ben does a good job of that, of depicting, but even still, right, with a fisheye GoPro lens, sometimes you're on some shit and you're like, dude, what's up with this? This wasn't in the video. And you're like, yeah, no, it was there. It just smoothed it out and it didn't look near as steep. But that is that next step to go like, okay, I can't commit to a 2-3 hour drive and a 2-3 hour training drive and a 2-3 hour ride back. So I've identified these key sections of a course, you know, and it's got to be 3 to 5 things in there. I mean, you can't be trying to focus on a dozen things. Right. So if descending, off camber or steep climb, you know, whatever that thing that is, like, this is going to be your biggest challenge, you know, the biggest demand of that course versus your capacity, then you're going to have to work the technical descents or the steep climbs or, you know, the twisty turny. And there is always something somewhere. I always think back when you went to Texas and at the time you were riding on the road and preparing for something, you were riding freeway overpasses to get your climb time in because it was so pancake flat. I thought it was ridiculous. It was crazy, but you did what needed to be done. So to get the climbing in, you were just going back and forth.
I forgot about that.
But it put your body in the right geometry on approximately the right grade, but that thing was just 1/20th the distance.
Yeah. So I just went back and forth doing. Over a bunch of time.
So you just go back.
Man, I have done some dumb shit in my life.
Well, that was just moving to pancake flat part of Texas.
There were a bunch of decisions that kind of, like, you know, descended into one begets another bad.
But there whatever. You go. So that is a thing of just slicing and dicing, knowing your strengths, measuring your capacity versus the demands of a course, and then determining where, you know. And there's some things where it's just like, dude, I'm like a mid-grade big gear climber. So it's just like, wow, should I just stack more time into this? Because, you know, this one small, super challenging demand is what where I'll do the least best. So you kind of have to weigh out. Am I going to improve upon that weakness? Or do I double down on the strength? Like, there's always that balance point.
And that's an interesting, like, conversation around diminishing returns. Like, when I went out and did the True Grit 50, like, that course has some stuff on it that, especially the first time I ever did it, was way beyond what I could do technically.
Right.
And so, like, you kind of sweat on that a little bit. You're like, dude, what can I do to, like, beef up my technical parts for these sections that I know are just, like, beyond what I can do. They're beyond what I can do on an open day, not a race. No one else is on the trail, right? Right. It's still too much for me. Not anymore, but the first time it was. So then you have to think about that. It's like, it's a 50-yard section in a 50-mile race. Maybe my strategy is to not focus on that. I'm going to get off the bike, walk the bike down, but then I'm going to get back on and power up this 8-mile-long
climb,
rolling.
Yeah.
Double track climb. Like, it'd be better for me to focus on that than to focus on this thing that on race day, only the front runners could go down anyway, because a ton of people can't do it and a ton of people are having to walk it.
I remember you saying sections of that stuff, barrel run or something. I remember off the top of my head where you said you just walked because people were just eating shit. And like you said, it's a micro section of the course where you need seasons, right, to get that proficient. And so it's just like, dude, I'm not gonna win the thing.
And even when I could ride it, like, I got to a point where I could ride down it on race day, it was too congested, right? So it's like, I still had to get off and walk. Like, that's not at least for my racing, that wasn't a decision, like a placemaker or taker, right? Like, it was just something I needed to get through so I could get to the point where I could work on a place taker or maker.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. So those would be definitely strategies, tips, ways to look at it. And so then
it's a really like interesting kind of point to dive into on like playing to your strengths versus like lifting up some of your weaknesses. I think there's a balance there. There's definitely like a point of diminishing returns on the weaknesses when you've got some strengths, but I think you have to look at the entirety of the course and the entirety of what you're trying to do to be able to make that judgment call.
I would say for sure. You know, I mean, I dig all of Joe Friel's stuff, and you know, he's the one that really, really popularized strengths and weaknesses and, you know, limiters, as guys would go, you know, shore up all the limiters. And so I think in the beginning, for sure, you need to know, you know, me, for example, I came into mountain biking like you with almost 20 years of road behind. So this big aerobic capacity, a lot of power, but literally zero skill. So it was like, okay, I let a lot of, as you know, a lot of the big power, a lot of, as like, it didn't matter because I couldn't get down all the little small things. You'd be waiting for me everywhere. So I think especially in the beginning, it's just like everything feels like a weakness and limiter, and it takes probably 2 to 3 seasons before you really see like, okay, I've got enough miles and time, like these off camber downhill left hand turns on the crumbly shit or climbing on what feels like ball bearings. I can't do it. So where do I go to make this better? Because I keep running into these terrain features. And I do think those are times, you know, now I'm at a point where I'm racing and I'm like, okay, dude, I'm not going airborne over these freaking features, man. So it's like, I ain't looking to do that. Like you said, these 2 or 3 small jumps are way more risky than the benefit that they're going to pay out. So I'm going to do some big meat gear work. So those guys that are jumping that, dude, you know, you can chase my wheel on a long mid-grade climb or something, you know?
We're talking a lot about dirt, but you can translate some of this over the road too. Like if you're getting into an event and it's been 18 months on Zwift and you haven't been in a group ride, right? Like that, you're going to need to spend some time getting used to being, you know, inches away from another cyclist at 30 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, like, I think we are, and I think what we're always, the philosophy that we're always sharing is this lifelong pursuit of mastery, right?
Yeah.
And the specific ways that we're doing it. Everyone's doing it in their particular way. And it could just continue forever, right? I mean, pick any one thing, whether it's a strength or a weakness, you could just, you know, always be making these.
Yeah.
Gains and improvements. I mean, definitely I've always been a strength-based dude, which is like at a certain point it's like, okay, I'm not going to kill myself or anybody else on this skill or this whatever, so I'm going to like triple down on some of the strength pieces, which has paid you know, big dividends. But season after season I am still doing that work, you know, to get fat. You know, today I was up riding and I'm like, damn dude, I'm like PRs on some of these downhill single track sections over chunky stuff, which before you'd be halfway done with a bar and a drink waiting for me, man.
Well, I think I don't want to like confuse people. Like you and I are both, and NFR in general, right, is about continuous improvement and continuing to do the work and get better at things. So as an overall like progression of your craft in the sport, obviously weaknesses are something that you want to, consider and work on. Right. Like,
right.
But then, so you've got like that high level view of like, I want to get better as a mountain biker in general. Here's some of the things that I'm, or as a cyclocross or as a road, here's some of the things I'm not great at. I'm going to work on those.
Yes.
But then when you start to point that energy towards a specific event, should I be focusing on those weaknesses? Or should I be, as you said, doubling down on your strengths? And I think it depends on factors that probably only that person can go for. Again, if I think it's whatever that feature was in True Grit, like getting really good at that wasn't going to, I wanted to get good at it from a personal growth perspective. Like I was super proud when I finally did it, race day, it wasn't something that I needed to make sure I could do. So that's where I'm saying, like, don't worry about that weakness for that moment.
Yes.
Because that's not gonna decide your race.
Yes.
So yeah. Look at within the course reconnaissance with the research that you're doing, like, take all of that into account. Of course, you're trying to continually improve. You want to do that. But what is the best strategy to get the position you want within this event?
And I'll also say, it's like, you do that and safety is the first thing, man, that, like, you got to prioritize. So, right, when you were like, hey, dude, I'm doing this True Grit, do you think, like, nah, dude, that's just not even possible, man. And I remember talking after, and you described it like, yeah, dude, there's no way, bro. I mean, like, I would have hurt myself. So those are the things and still for me to this day, as I still look, right, we've both crashed a ton over the years. So it's like, is there anything that will hurt or potentially, you know, permanently maim or kill me, man? I mean, it can happen, right? I raced that firefighter event. Remember where the dude died on the course, man?
Yeah.
That was a real deal. The guy, I remember like, okay, stop this midway. I was thinking I'm coming into a podium. They stop and it's hotter. It's later. We find out, hey, man, this guy died on the course. Like, dude, put that shit into perspective, right? And it was a downhill. Who knows? Nobody was around him. Nobody knows exactly what the hell happened. So I have this very real thing of, like, you know, first check for yourself. The goal is always, you know, I think they say it definitely way more on the roadside. Like, keep the rubber side down, man. You know, keep the rubber side down. No unplanned dismounts.
So at the end of this, I kind of want to go through, like, we try to do the takeaways, right?
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things I think we glossed over, but you just said it, was the goal, right? Like, what's the goal of that event?
Yes.
Which will help you determine kind of where you're applying some of your energy and where you're not.
So, correct. So that's good as we transitioned it in, right? We just start blowing it up and talking. So demands versus capacity.
I mean, I am drinking, so. Who knows?
You're three hours ahead. So what is, like you said, initially, it just starts with the goal, right? It's typically something about that event attracts us, right? So do you want to win? Do you want to successfully participate? Do you want to prove to yourself, right?
Let's go through this checklist that you're doing.
Okay.
Using your Grizzly 100 example that you're, like, that you're preparing for, right? Like, so let's bring the real world to it.
So I'm preparing for this event September 25th. So I had ridden it, 2 years ago? So this year, what am I doing? I already know the demands of the course. I know the course profile. I know how many miles.
What's your goal for this year?
So my goal this year is to win and to better that podium position from third to second. I had that catastrophic crash, which was, I would call it 25 minutes downtime because I got so jacked up and I was still able to step onto a podium. So the first place dude, like, that would be rough to beat him, but that is the goal. And then that secondary goal, which is probably more likely, would be to bump up that position. No crashing.
Right. Which but so like that, in. But like, not crashing, as silly as it sounds, because no one ever wants to crash.
As well.
Is a goal, because you were going through a section that was fairly technical that I don't remember if it caught you off guard or not, but, like,
yeah.
So you want to be, which is one of the reasons why I believe you're going up and doing it, for some familiarity just physically and being in that, like, being as tired as you're going to be at that point in the race, all that stuff. But being able to kind of work through some of the things that caused you to miss your goal last time, which was that crash.
Right. So that goal is, we'll just say, win, strip it down, right? So, okay. So what are going to be the limiters there? What are the weaknesses that I have, or those deficits? I think it is still always going to be, you know, I climb better than I descend. So I always am doing double work, sorry about that, on those most technical sections. I don't know how many times I've ridden over that section where I ate shit and flipped over, but it's like, okay, I see what happened now. I was tired. I misread bits of the course. So just like you said, that was midway into a 48-mile ride and just riding towards the front on a podium pace. And the section I didn't see, man, you know, I was unprepared for what was going to be there. So, that's what I'm doing right now, is to make sure, okay, re-ride those, it's like, oh yeah, this is not near as technical as it was back in 2019. I'm definitely faster through it. Mm-hmm. So now that I can take care of that piece, right, the safety end, then it's just like, okay, do I have that overall capacity to ride this thing? So mm-hmm. the Radford climb, I'm posting regularly on that freaking thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, how many bigger, longer sections of this race course that I'm doing to make sure it's like, okay, I'm not a high, neither one of us are big, high volume training guys. I mean, I'll start posting my Strava thing. I think last year or last month I did, I don't know, 12 hours maybe, you know, there was a shit ton of climbing in there, but we are, you know, we trained way less. And I was even doing that in 2019. So
I got the first week I was out in California, we did 12 hours.
Right. And that was the first time for a long time for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big week.
We don't typically do that.
No.
Yeah. And that's about a month. So I'll look for that Strava thing, but that was
everybody out there right now is like, low-key flexing on us, like, bro, I ride like 18 hours a month, man.
Right? But it's always down to the quality shit. And as you age, right, that's a whole nother fucking topic, or I'm 52 now.
Oh, I'm still 20. I don't know what you're talking about.
But we did, you know, goal courses versus demand versus capacity. I checked to see my downhill capacity versus those downhill demands. Check that as well. Mm-hmm. And then overall my capacity versus the demands of this 48 mile, nearly, let's call it 8,000 feet of climbing course. So it's like, okay, I'm checking off on that. Today I did another, whatever it was, 3.5 hours up in Wrightwood. So it's like, okay, I have that capacity to do that. So that's the way that I strip these things down and then methodically go after them. And the very first things I was going after, because you got to prioritize again. It's like, I'm not trying to ride all 48 miles the first day. That's not the first test. The first test is go to that place where you thought you broke your skull and smashed your shoulder. It's like, okay, I gotta get down there.
Yeah.
And to get repeats on that over the course of multiple training sessions. And then, you know, once it becomes a green check mark, it's like, okay, let me bump to the next thing. Can I do the long climb and do the hairy descents? Okay, got another check mark. Can I do some more miles? Cool. So you just keep working to progress on these, you know, capacity sets. Because like you said too, you got to also feel like, and I always encourage that you feel like, I am ready, man. I'm prepared. Yeah. You know, even if it's something where you're just like, I'm not going to do as I would have maybe wanted to, but I'm ready. This is as ready as I can get. Nobody is ever going to do 10, 20, 30% better on race day or event day or goal day than on training days. It's 2 to 4% a lot, man. So it's probably 2 to 3%. So be mindful of that. That's why we are always like, hey, man, you're on that indoor trainer, you're pushing, you're outdoors, you know, testing these sections. And that's kind of how I strip it down. If it was going to be somewhere like the Compo Filthy 50 race down there, I couldn't drive all the time. So I checked course profile, the description. I looked for YouTube videos. Thanks again, Ben. I'd set up the kicker. They'd be climbing and I'm like, all right, well, let me throw, what would I typically be climbing in? I know the wattage, I know the gearing. So it's like, holy shit, that's a long climb, you know? So you get the very visceral, real sense of like, oh man, I need some more climbing time, or shit, they're going to follow with a super technical descent after that long ass climb. Like, I don't typically do that.
Yeah.
So that would be the distance or the virtual, you know, way. So that's kind of both styles, you know?
So then as we come to the close of this, one of the other things I think to talk about though is like, so you've done this preparation, right? Like you've gone through, you understand the demands, you've aligned your capacity with those demands, you've done some recon, you've decided where you're going to focus on applying your strengths and weaknesses through the course based on some of that reconnaissance. And then there are surprises, as in they've gone out and now they've graded the road that that you've ridden a couple times and now all of a sudden it's completely different because they've graded it or they've done something. So like, how do you, within this prep, and obviously that's a surprise that you learned about because you went up there, but when you don't have that, that luxury, like within this prep, how do you account for or deal with surprises?
Yeah, so that's so best case scenario is when you can be at the course is when you'll know. You know, that's the ideal. At the minimum, you know, if you can't at least even drive it. I used to do it when I would drive out to long events for the road, because of course you could just drive the road and see what it was like. Mm-hmm. Or if there are folks that live nearby those things and have our resources, you know, it's one of the goals with the NFR stuff, right? So we have this big nationwide group of folks. Yeah. So you could be like, hey man, you live wherever, you know, the Ozarks, or I'm going to go do this, you know, ultra endurance event, whatever, you know, so that you could talk to someone that's like, hey, typically it's like this. And, here's what just happened. Yeah. Like you said, they just took a freaking, a dozer to that thing and it's all jacked up. Right. So, you know, if you can't physically ride it, drive it, then you're going to have to do your best then to kind of like, okay, as you know, talking to race promoters, if you know no one, and you know, is there anything that gets changed in the course, or as they're felling trees or cleaning trails, or, you know, because that's kind of their job too, right? They're putting out a course description. They're letting you know. So that's what I would say. Physically ride, physically drive. Reach out to someone that you know that's going to give you like, hey, man, this is what it's like. And then that final thing would be the race promoters out there. It's like, hey, dude, what can you tell me? Have you had any rain, or is there, what happens if it does rain? Some places you want to go there and it's like, oh, shit, all the water bars are jacked, you know? Yeah. Those are maybe good questions to think about when you're talking to someone you don't know who's got local knowledge, and they just, for them, that's normal. And little things, you know, you got to think to ask somebody sometimes.
Yeah. What I would add to that is, and this is true through all of it, is just like keep your mental game on point, right? Like be flexible, understand that things may change even after you feel like you've gotten it all dialed in, and you're going to have to adapt. And that's when you hear me say, like, give yourself some grace to adapt and do what you got to do. Don't get so locked into this prescriptive idea based on what you've done that, like, you get locked up mentally if something changes. Just stay bendy.
So I think on that is, so if you expect adversity, if you expect shit to happen, you know, if it doesn't, good on you. You're like, hell yeah, man, I thought some shit was gonna go down. It's like, that was sweet.
Yeah.
But when you expect some shit to happen, someone crashes in front of you, or some part of the course was mismarked, or
someone forgets your shoes on the other side of the river.
Right. Whatever, man. The dude dies on the course and we get stopped. Yeah. And I'm like, he's first, I'm second, this third. It's like, okay, well, whatever. Hey, shit happens, man.
Yeah.
Right. So if you expect some adversity, it's hot, whatever, you know, it's just, it'll make you at least prepare for the, like, okay, I got my fuel, I got my hydration, I got air, you know, it'll make you reflect on that to make sure you got that shit. Then there are the things that are out of your control, so that when it does occur, you're like, dude, that's out of my control, man. I came as prepared as possible. And like you said, give yourself some grace at that point. Continue on, man.
Keep rolling. Consider and embrace the chaos.
Yes. There you go.
It's bike racing. So. All right, man, that closes us up pretty close to our typical time limit, so that was good stuff. I appreciate it, man. It's always a good time,
dude. It's always good just to kick it here with you, man.
All right, so I'm gonna close this one up. We'll get this out in the next few days, and we'll get a regular cadence moving through these. So if you've made it this far, you've listened this far, drop a comment in iTunes, drop a comment on the website, please. Twitter, Instagram, all these places you can find us. Let us know what was valuable, what wasn't, if my jokes are funny, if they're not. It's cool. All I got are dad jokes, so most of them aren't funny. But let us know how this is working for you, what you want more of, what you want less of, because this in the end is about you and providing value for you guys.
That's it, man. Right on, bro. Thanks, man.
Cool. Yep. Thanks again. Till next time. Keep riding.
Till next time.